This week's parsha of Parshas Bechukosai is always read 2 weeks before Shavuos, just like Parshas Kitavo is always read 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah. And the reason that Ezra was misaken these two parshios to be read, one before Shavuos and one before Rosh Hashanah, is because both these parshios contain the brachos and the klalos, the blessing and the curses, that befall the Jewish people if they listen to God, or what happens to Jewish people should they stray away from God. And the parsha begins clearly, Im bechukotai telechu, if one walks in the ways of God. So then we have the beautiful blessings of rain in the right time, peace in the land, Kadosh Baruch Hu will be among the people. And if not, so then the Torah lists these terrible curses that will befall the Jewish people. The end of parsha bechukotai deals with the laws of erechin, the laws of the value of a person, and the laws of the ability for a person to consecrate an object for the temple. It's very fitting that Sefer Vayikra, which is really the concept of Kedushas Yisrael, the holiness of the Jewish people, should end and explain to Rav Aviner and Tal Hermon with this concept of being able to consecrate something for the temple. It shows how every individual has the ability through his dibur, through speech, to make something holy for God. Delving into our particular issue, perhaps the most famous Ramban of the Parsha is the Ramban that deals with, that even within the klalos of the terrible curse of Ashimoti, that Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to make Shemama desolate our land. So there the Ramban explains that this is really a Besarat Tova, good news, that no other nation will be able to settle the land of Israel, will be able to cultivate the land except the Jewish people. And this Ramban has been borne out historically to be so correct. How Eretz Yisrael, which we know is part of the Fertile Crescent, very fertile land as described in the Torah, as described in Josephus and many other works, suddenly when the Jews are kicked out of the land, no other nation has been able to cultivate and allow the land to grow, to remain an arid and dry land, the famous description of Mark Twain, visiting the land of Israel and describing the tremendous desolation of the land. And yet, when Klal Yisrael returned to Eretz Yisrael, we've seen the last 100 years how it's returned once again to an Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, to a land filled with milk and honey. Along these lines, I'd like to take a look at one verse, and also see it in terms, in the light of our rabbis, how although it seems to be a very negative verse, and it seems to be a curse, there is a positive value that is found within it. And that's found in verse 31, among the klalos, the curses. It says, I will let your cities fall into ruins and make your sanctuaries desolate. No longer will I accept the appeasing fragrance of your sacrifices. And then it continues with a verse we just mentioned. I'll make the land so desolate that even your enemies who live there will be astonished. I will scatter you among the nations and keep the sword drawn against you. Your land will remain desolate and your cities in ruins. And verse 31, it's a very fascinating insight of our rabbis brought down in the Gemara Megillah. On the verse, or the selection, and make your sanctuaries desolate. So the rabbis say, Vashimoti amigdashchem, kidushasan af kishem shomimim. Although the sanctuaries are destroyed, the kedusha, the holiness, still remains. So when it speaks about the sanctuaries being desolate, our rabbis come to understand that yes, the physical place where the sanctuary stood, yes, that place is desolate, but the kedusha, the holiness inherent in that place, has never been affected. Kedushasan as kishem shomimim. The kedusha, the holiness, remains, although they are shomimim, although they are destroyed. I'd like to try to examine together today on two levels of why is this so. Explain on a deeper level the significance, the mechanics, so to speak, of what does it mean that a place can be destroyed but the kedusha can be maintained. And clearly, according to both levels, what we need to try to understand is the relevancy for our lives, the lessons that we can learn for our own personal lives and our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. The first level will be more of a technical level, the second a little bit more philosophical. The first, the technical level, is found in the writings of Rabbi Tatz in World Mask, where he brings down a very beautiful medrash. The medrash explains that there are three whose names preceded them. There were three people who received their names even before they were born. Rabbi Katz notes that the Medrash also includes Yishmael as the fourth on the list, but that's not going to be our discussion today. The three that the Medrash brings that I would like to speak about, and Rabbi Katz speaks about, are Yitzchak Avinu, Shlomo HaMelech, and Yoshiyahu HaMelech. All three of them, their names were given even before they were born. So, for example, Avraham Avinu is told, and you shall call his name Yitzchak. And Sarimena wasn't even pregnant yet. So all three have this in common. So as Rabbi Katz, there must be some connection between these three personalities, Yitzchak Avinu, Shlomo HaMelech, and Yoshiyahu HaMelech. Yoshiyahu, the least famous of the three, was the king a number of years before the Chorban, before the destruction of the temple, and a very, very righteous king. So the question is, what is the common denominator? What is the common link between these three personalities? And he explains that they're all connected with the Beis HaMikdash, with the temple. What does this mean? So we know that Yitzchak Avinu built the initial manifestation of the Beis HaMikdash as a place of service to Hashem, of sacrifices, in the most powerful way. He became a korban, a sacrifice himself. He was bound on the altar, built on the site that would later become the temple. He laid the foundation of the function of the temple, the function of service and sacrifice with his own being. So long before the physical structure of the Beis HaMikdash was built, its inner essence was being constructed. That is the personality, that is the part that Yitzchak Avinu gave to the Beis HaMikdash. The way Rabbi Katz describes it would be the soul, the purpose of the temple as a place of sacrifice. If the soul was infused into that place by Yitzchak Avinu, so next personality, Shlomo HaMelech, built the second stage, which was the astral structure of the Beis HaMikdash. He built and dedicated the physical building, and he was the one who gave, so to speak, the body for that soul, for that spirit. He gave that place a structure for us to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Shlomo HaMelech also began the third stage, and that was creating an underground caravan with an entrance from the Holy of Holies, so when the destruction would take place, there would be a place to hide and to bury the Aron, the Holy Ark. And that leads us to the third personality of Yoshiyahu HaMelech. During the times of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, there was a very famous woman, Huldah the prophetess, who forewarned Yoshiyahu that the destruction was coming. And therefore Yoshiyahu decided that it was up to him to save the Aron, to save the Holy Ark by hiding it in its secret hiding place. So we clearly see here how all three of them are connected with the Beis HaMikdash. Yitzchak Avinu, the essence, the neshama, the soul. Shlomo HaMelech giving that essence expression in the physical structure. But then comes the third stage, as Rabbi Katz notes. It requires one more component. It must be given eternity. The Beis HaMikdash stood, it was alive with inner essence contained in outer form, but it was also to be destroyed. And in order to ensure the destruction would be only outward, to ensure that the essence will remain alive even when the outer form lies in ruins, the heart was to be hidden. If the Aron is hidden beneath the side of the temple when above, if the temple burns and collapses, the meaning is that this is not a destruction. It is only a retreating into the unrevealed. And that's what Yoshiyahu did. This hiding, therefore, was in a very deep sense, really, a building. And in summary, Yitzchak brought the heart to the world, Shlomo gave that heart a body, and Yoshiyahu secreted that same heart away so that it remains pulsating and alive in hiding, while awaiting its final revelation for eternity. Yitzchak built the neshama, Shlomo the body, and Yoshiyahu ensured that these two would never be permanently separated. Rabbi Katz goes on to explain, almost parenthetically for us, that the name is the essence of a person. The name really describes the reality of the person in the most precise way. And therefore, when a person is given a name before they actually come into this world, it means that there's going to be a very deep connection between the name and the individual and the task that they are meant to complete. They will be ones who will be very faithful to the completion of their task, which indeed each one of the three were. And that's why each one of the three who was so committed and was able to fulfill their task, their purpose in the world, were all connected with the concept of the temple, the Beis HaMikdash. Because as Rabbi Katz notes, this is really the essence of the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash represents the perfect meeting between inner and outer world. It's a demonstration of harmony between inner and outer. It's a place which most clearly represents the invisible bond between body and soul, spirit and matter. It's a physical place and structure which is in perfect harmony with its non-physical core. And this is where Hashem's name is spoken, and this is where it is revealed. So we see on the first level, really a technical level, that although the physical structure of the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the fact that Yoshiyahu HaMelech took the Aron, the Holy Ark, and hid it away, what it means is that the heart was taken out of the building before it was destroyed. And therefore, although the physical building was destroyed, it nevertheless maintains its Kedusha, maintains its holiness, the heart is still beating. Right now, as we speak, there's the heartbeat of the temple, the Kedusha of the temple, still strong and alive, secreted within the Har HaBayis, the Temple Mount. And this heart, this Aron, is waiting. The heartbeat is continuing and waiting for the time that the body and soul will once again be reunited, the time when the temple will once again be rebuilt, and thereby the Aron will be able to return back to its original place. Even though it's Shomein, even though it's destroyed, B'Kedushasan Hemomdim, nevertheless, the Kedusha is very much present. If we understand this, and we understand this very deeply, I'd like to try to then take this as a template for a model for our own lives and our own relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. What lesson can we derive from this? What understanding, what implications does this have for our lives? So I think perhaps the answer can be understood within the context of the beginning of the parasha. Beginning of the parasha, as we mentioned, speaks about if we follow the Kadosh Baruch Hu's ways, then all the different brachos, all the different blessings that will be bestowed upon the Jewish people. And in this description in verse 11 at the beginning of the parasha, it notes, I will place my sanctuary among you, and my spirit will not reject you. I will walk among you, I will be God unto you, and you will be my people unto me. I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt from being your slaves. I broke the stays of your yoke, and I led you erect. On the concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being B'tochechem among the Jewish people, explains the Or Gedaliah, Rav Gedaliah Halevi, explains that this means B'tochechem haynu b'chol yochid v'yochid, within each and every individual. That the Shekhinah should be found on every individual, which means v'gufo yiyeh kli ba'ad hashra'at hashchinah. One's body is going to be a receptacle, a repository for the hashra'at hashchinah, for the divine presence. And that's what it means, v'haynu v'lo tigal nashi etchem. The continuation of the verse which states that my spirit will not reject you means da'aguf v'neshama yat'imu yachdav. The body and soul will be in perfect match together. And the body is not going to be a barrier in order to be able to imbibe the Shekhinah. That's why he goes on to explain that even malachim have a body. Even angels have a guf, have a body. But rather, their body is so perfected that it doesn't create a barrier between body and soul. And this is really the state of perfection in which Adam HaRishon was created. As we know, Rabbi Kirshner brings it down in the Art of Jewish Prayer based on the writings of the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, that the original intention in creating man and woman with a body and soul was so that the soul should elevate itself as well as their body during their joint sojourn on earth, and through this process the body would receive soul-like properties, and just like the soul is immortal and cannot die, so what would have happened was the body would also become immortal as well. The original creation was the creation of body serving soul perfectly, where the soul was the essence and the body was there in order to fulfill the purposes of the soul to do the will of God. And that's why it was no necessity to have clothes, because the body was the clothes of the soul. The soul would infuse itself and its properties totally into the body. This is the goal, where the body and soul together can work to serve God. And as we know what happened, by eating of the tree, what the first man did was to create the separation between body and soul and have the body in its own right feeding the body. The food is creating the body in its own right irrespective of the soul, really going against the soul and God's desires. And once that barrier was established, so then the body was no longer be able to take the soul-like properties, and death therefore became inevitable. We clearly understand that the concept of Tchiyas Hamatim, the resurrection of the dead, is where the soul and body separate, each developing according to the potential that they infused on this earth, in order that they can come back together and work in perfect harmony in the vision of the future world. But as the Daf Torah points out, Rabbi Yerucham Halevi, he says that in reality, our job, our goal in life, what is our job? It's to return this original connection. Instead of the soul and the body being at opposing ends one from each other, they should become one. They should be able to both do the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's interesting that he knows, he says, this description of relationship between man and women, a man and a woman, of ezer kenegdo, either they will be a helpmate or kenegdo be an opposing factor, is really also describing the inner relationship between the guf and the neshama. The body can be a helpmate for the soul, it can allow the soul to do mitzvot, or the body can really be standing in opposition to the soul and dragging the soul far away from its purpose in this world. Our job is to try to make our body desire the will of God and not only desire its own will. It's the model of David HaMelech who says, Samalecha nafshi, my soul yearns for you, is thirsty for you, God. And the rest of the pasuk in the 63rd kapitel, second pasuk, it's Kamalecha basari, but not only is my soul thirsty for you, my body as well pines for you, God, has a desire for you. This is what we're talking about, that our body as well has a desire for God. And I think that this model of the Beis HaMikdash, of body-soul, really parallels our model of body-soul. Just like Yitzhak Avinu established the soul of the temple, really to give his life to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to God, and Shlomo HaMelech built that physical structure that worked in tandem with the body, that allowed the ability for us to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the physical structure. So I think that describes our relationship with body and soul as well, where we have a soul whose sole desire is to serve God, and we have a body that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us to do that exact function and job to serve Him. And just like the temple was destroyed, and the temple was no longer able to be a place to have the soul serve God, so we too, to a very certain degree, are also in that same state of mind, that same framework. The shmama, the desolation of the physical structure of the temple, to a certain degree represents and reflects the shmama, the desolation of our bodies. The peirud, that divisiveness that occurred as a result of the sin of Adam HaRishon, is the state that we are in. We are with an imperfect body-soul relationship. It's the Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, returning to a level of Adam HaRishon before the sin at Mount Sinai. Again, the perfect harmony of body-soul, which was again broken as a result of the sin of the golden calf. And as a result of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was no longer able to reside in each and every individual, and there was a necessity to build a physical structure in order to reach God. We have that ability, if we could put body and soul together, to be the conduit for relationship with God. But here's the key. The key is that even though Chazal tell us on our pasuk that the Beis HaMikdash is physically destroyed, nevertheless, the Kedusha Sanheim Omdim, nevertheless, the Kedusha is still there. Yeshayahu HaMelech hid that soul, hid that heart. The heartbeat is still there, and that's what we have to understand within us. Although we're not living in this perfect harmony, in this perfect balance, although the body-soul relationship isn't perfect, our body doesn't yearn for God, our body yearns to fulfill our personal pleasure, nevertheless, the heartbeat, the soul within a person is still very much alive. And we need to keep that soul alive. We need to keep that desire, the heartbeat alive, to continue that relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so that we are ready for when the time where that perfect harmony and balance will come, the soul will be working, the soul will be functioning in order to be able to serve God completely. And I think that that's really our challenge. Our challenge is to be able to maintain our own heartbeat, just like Yoshiyahu did by hiding it away in the innermost part of the Beis HaMikdash. And it's interesting to note that Rav Wolbe and the Alei Shur points out on a Rashi in this week's parasha, a very powerful Rashi, when the Chumash talks about that if Ve'im Techui Mikeri, if you walk with the Kadosh Baruch Hu B'mikre, by chance. And Rashi understands this concept of Keri, quoting Targum Unklos, by saying it's a lashon koshi, a language of harshness, which means makshim libam limanam litkarev elav. A person hardens their heart to prevent themselves from coming closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Explains Rav Wolbe, it's the teva of a person, it's the nature of a person that the leiv hu lishof lekirvaso yisparach, for the heart to desire to come close to Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's only if we harden our hearts do we really create this distance from God. The heart wants to beat. The heart wants to have a relationship with God. You have to work really hard to look at this world as a world of purely by chance, to look at this world as a world devoid of spirituality, devoid of God. The nature of a person, it's not this high elevated level that a person strives for closeness for God. No. It's the nature of a person to come close to Kadosh Baruch Hu. What we need to do is to take that natural inclination and fan the flame, so to speak, and to make it part of ourselves, part of our lives, that all we want is this relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. All we want is to do the Ratzon Hashem. I heard a beautiful story this past Shabbos. I was at the Torah Masorah Convention in New York, which I think really reflects this desire of the heart to come close to Hashem, which we need to just try to develop. There was a Rebbetzin from the Tel Aviv Yeshiva who was describing a story that happened to her father when her father was a young boy just turning bar mitzvah, and this time was World War I. Lived in Telz in Europe, and it was a time when it was very dangerous to have Sifrei Torah being read on Shabbos. And they kept the Sifrei Torah in hiding, and only certain times a year did they take it out. And this young boy, knowing he was becoming bar mitzvah, he had just one desire. His desire was that he should be ola la Torah, he should have an aliyah to the Torah at the time of his bar mitzvah. And for nights, for weeks and months on end, he couldn't sleep because all he wanted was that he should be zelche, he should merit this for his bar mitzvah, he should get an aliyah to the Torah. She explained, as it turned out, his bar mitzvah was right after Pesach, and they took out the Torahs for Pesach, and Isru Chag was Friday, and they kept the Torahs around so that Shabbos, the Shabbos after Pesach, they still had the Torahs, they hadn't put them back in hiding, and this boy was able to have an aliyah to the Torah, he was able to get an aliyah at the time of his bar mitzvah. I think this story is a very poignant story because it shows where are our desires. What does a 13-year-old boy think about today? Is his desire to get an aliyah l'Torah? Is his desire that his bar mitzvah should be a spiritual event? These are the questions we need to ask ourselves. Is our focus a spiritual focus, or is our focus, well, what gifts am I going to get from our bar mitzvah? Or what trip am I going to go to in honor of my bar mitzvah? Where is our focus? Is our focus on the spirituality, on keeping our heartbeat alive? Or is our focus on the guf, on the physical body? I'd like to very briefly deal with this question and ask, Well, how do we keep this heartbeat alive? How do we take that model of Yoshiyahu HaMelech and say, let's keep the heart around, that even if the physical body is not working with the heart perfectly, we want to keep that heartbeat alive. So I'd like to suggest, perhaps, very briefly, two approaches on how we can keep the heartbeat alive. And Strive for Truth explains the concept of spiritual acquisitions which reside in our souls and our very being. And he speaks about the concept that if we want to acquire things spiritually, if we want them to become really part of our souls, so then we have to integrate them into our being. And he explains that to know something intellectually has no power to influence our action. It's as if the part of us which knows is not the same part which acts. In order to really make this heartbeat alive, it's not just enough to add more intellectual knowledge to our lives. Like we know many people who, while they're smoking, you ask them, does smoking cause lung cancer? They'll say, oh, absolutely. And yet they're smoking. Because intellectual knowledge alone does not have the power to affect a person. Continues Rav Dessler, neither do we mean mere emotionalism and enthusiasm. These are not acquisitions either, because they are transient. They tend to cool off very quickly. What we mean by spiritual acquisitions are those spiritual attainments that have become internalized to such an extent that one could not imagine oneself without them. An act is done lishma when it is done as a matter of course, when the good deed is not seen by the doer as deserving special credit, just as one does not feel proud at being able to see or hear. On the contrary, inability to see or hear is perceived as a defect. And he continues by saying, it is within a person's competence to make himself to extend and enlarge his very being. He can return to his heart all the knowledge gained by his Torah study, which then becomes an addition to his very own being. To make something part of ourselves. The key is to take the intellectual aspect. The key is to take our emotional inspiration, our enthusiasm, and to work it through that it becomes part and parcel of a person, that the person imbibes it but completely, and it becomes as part of the person. Not an external part of the person, but they use that in working with other people. And by integrating that which we learn into our lives. We hear a concept, we're inspired by a concept, so now we need to then say, well, how am I going to practically make this part of myself? How am I going to act on that which I have learned? And if a person can take an idea that they've learned and make it part of themselves and part of their reality, and at times it takes weeks and months, but then it becomes part of a person and a second nature to the person, so then that's a kinyan olam, that's a real acquisition. And I think that's step number one. In terms of making the heartbeat alive, a person has to always ask themselves, am I able to take that which I am learning, take that which I am being exposed to, and making it part of my repertoire of who I am as a person? If a person has the ability to do that, so the person is constantly making sure that the heart is beating and constantly making sure that they are growing. Which leads us to the second aspect of making sure that the heart is beating, the heart is growing, and that's a beautiful drash. Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein on this week's parasha, when he speaks about v'lo tagil nafshi, that Kadosh Baruch Hu should not reject us, he says so beautifully, he says, sha'af kishaholech b'darchei Hashem. He says, you have people who can walk in the ways of Hashem. V'u amal b'tarah u'b'masim tovim, and he can be very involved in Torah and in good deeds. However, yesh lo lidog, a person should worry. Shema eina oseh kefi ha'afshariyot shebeyado. He's not acting based on all the opportunities he has in his hand. O shema, or perhaps mistapek var b'masim shasa, shezeh sanei Hashem. Or perhaps he's relying on the actions that he's already done, and this is what God despises so much. It's called sitting on our laurels. It's called apathy. It's called complacency. It's called a person saying, I've done enough, or I've reached a certain level, I'm happy where things are at. take, for example, the field that I'm in education. So I've met in my lifetime teachers who've been teaching for 20, 25 years. Teach, the answer is no. Because they say, well, I've taught this for 20 years. I have all my worksheets. I have everything I need. And they're not growing. They're not moving. They're not being able to develop and change and really trying to reach children in different ways. Life is about constantly changing, constantly growing. To keep the heartbeat alive is not to say, well, I've reached a certain level, my avodas Hashem, my service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I've worked hard at it, and this is where I'm at, and I'm happy, let me stop where I'm at. No. How can I work harder? It's really, really the continuation of the first level. How can I integrate an idea into my life? How can I become a better person? When it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will not despise you, very powerful insight of Rav Moshe, where a person can be involved in Torah and mitzvot, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu could still despise the person, because the person is not on a path of growth, not on a path of constantly trying to improve oneself. To give perhaps a simple example, but sometimes in simplicity is depth. I read recently a book about teaching children, the way to raise children. So one of the comments that this particular rabbi mentioned was to have a tremendous emphasis on a very young age in emunah and faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make Hashem like really a household word. So one of the suggestions he gave is at night, to before going to sleep, to walk through with the child what are the things that the child is thankful for. So, Toda Hashem, thank you Hashem, for Abba, for Ima, for the grandparents, for uncles, aunts, for the house, clothing, hands, eyes, and to go through a whole list of things that the child should become conditioned that everything that we have is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, I'm recently starting this with our little one, who's 2.5. So, we go through the list every night of Abba, Ima, Babi, Zaidi, Saba, Safta, and we go through a whole list. And then I turned to her and I said, Rachel, what else do you want to say Todah to Hashem for? So what's on the top of her list? Park. Say Todah to Hashem for park. Then she goes to the park. Gardner Park, Roxbury Park, Zoo Park. She goes to a different park she's Todah to Hashem for, which is very beautiful because in her mind, you know, her life revolves around parks. But here's the key. If 20 years from now, she'll still do the same exercise and at that age, she'll say, Todah Hashem, and the first thing that's going to come to her mind is parks, Gardner Park, Roxbury Park, Zoo Park, so then we've missed the boat. The problem in life is that we don't change as we should change. We remain stagnated on parks, and we don't then move in life. Well, at 20 or 22, parks is not perhaps the primary focus of what I need to say Todah to Hashem for. And this is, I think, a key in life, where we see so clearly how a child between the ages of 1 and 5 develops so dramatically. And 5 and 10 is the dramatic changes. But what happens between 40 and 45 and 50 and 55? And that's where the problems start. To keep the heartbeat alive on the second level is to make sure we're always growing, to infuse the heart with spiritual content and meaning in life, and asking ourselves when we learn something new, can we integrate it into our lives? Can we make it part of ourselves? And can we constantly be growing? And this, my friends, is level one. Level one, on a technical level, what does it mean? That although the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, it still maintains its Kedusha. Is that Yitzchak Avinu infused the soul, Shlomo HaMelech built the body, there's Yoshiyahu HaMelech who hid that soul and allowed that heartbeat to still be maintained underneath the building. So although the physical building was destroyed, the heartbeat still remains. This becomes a template for our lives. Where we have our soul, we have our body, and perhaps our body is in a state of desolation because it's not working in tandem with our soul. Nevertheless, the soul is always beating. The soul is always waiting for that time to be reunited with the perfect body-soul relationship. That's our goal. That's, as Rabbi Yochum says, that's where our focus has to be. We can keep that soul beating, we can keep that heart beating by making sure we integrate that which we learn into our lives, not just intellectually or emotionally, but it becomes who we are. And we have to, as Rav Moshe says, constantly ask ourselves, how am I growing, how am I improving? Because as Rav Wolbe noted, the natural tendency is for our heart to have a relationship with God, but we need to keep that natural tendency alive and afire. That's level one. Level two is based on a very beautiful Rambam in the Hilchos Beis HaBechira, where he notes, he says, Lefi shekedushas hamikdash v'yushalayim, the holiness of the temple and of Jerusalem is mipnei hashchina, is because of the shchina of the divine presence. The shchina eina betela, and the shchina is never destroyed, and that's what it means. Vahareyahu omer vashimoti amikdashchem. Kosh Baruch Hu tocha, when it describes, I will destroy your temples. Vamru chachamim, and our rabbis have stated, afal pi sheshomamim, even though they're destroyed, they maintain their level of kedusha, they maintain their level of holiness. On the second level, the reason why the temple is able to maintain its kedusha, is because the kedusha, the holiness of the temple, is not a man-made kedusha. It's made, it's given, it's infused by Kadosh Baruch Hu himself. And since it's infused by Kadosh Baruch Hu, that can never be taken away, and that kedusha is the eternal kedusha, which is mirrored in the Haftarah of Yirmiyah, which describes Kisei Kavod Maru Marishon Mikom Migdashenu, as the throne of glory exalted from the beginning, so is the place of our sanctuary. And the Medrash tells us that there were seven concepts that were created before the world came into existence, and one of them is the Beis HaMikdash. This place has the Kedusha from beginning of time, and therefore it will never be taken away. It can never be taken away. A physical building can be destroyed, yes, but the Kedusha, the holiness, which is eternal, it pertains to the world, that can never be taken away. If we understand that this Kedusha is eternal, it's an eternal Kedusha, so we can understand so beautifully an insight of the Klei Yikar in Sefer Bereishis. The Klei Yikar, in describing the verse where Kadosh Baruch Hu said to Avram, raise your eyes, and from the place where you are now standing, look to the north, to the south, and to the east, and to the west. For the land that you see, I will give to you and to your offspring forever. And then the Chumash describes how Avram moved on, and he came and settled in the plains of Mamre and Hebron, and built an altar to Hashem. So explains the Klei Yikar that we find in this selection two ways that Avram Avinu acquires the land. One is in a ruchnius way, a spiritual way, and that is acquired through re'iyah, through seeing. Lift up your eyes, raise your eyes. And the other is gufani, is in a physical way, and that is kumi talech ba'aretz, walk through the land. The Klei Yikar notes that this way of walking through the land, there's no guarantee that this will be for you and for your descendants. The physical aspect of the land can belong to you, can be taken away, and then given back to you. But the spiritual aspect of the land will never be taken away from you. It's promised to Avram and to his descendants. Why? Because as we've seen, the spiritual part is because of the Kedusha, the holiness where Hashem's Shechina is found there. And here I'd like to quote this Klei Yikar because it is so powerful and relevant for our lives. He explains, Kisham Mikom Mikdash Shalmata. Here is the place of the Mikdash of below, which is Mechuvan Knege Beis HaMikdash Shamala, which is parallel to the place of the Mikdash of above. And in paraphrasing the Klei Yikar, he continues, this is the place where Kadosh Baruch Hu resides. This is Chavyon Uzo, the place of his strength. And says the Klei Yikar, anyone who looks at this place, Miyad immediately is Nitlabesh Ruach Tarao Kedusha, is immediately enclosed with a spirit of purity and holiness. And it says, if a person is acquiring a shlemus, a certain perfection in this place, it was this place that we came to three times a year to see a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and it was a place that we were seen by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And it continues the Klei Yikar by saying that this holiness of the Beis HaMikdash can never be taken away. It is there forever, no matter what happens. And he says, in this place, מן המקום הקדוש אשר אתה עמד בו, כי בו תקנה השלמות הרוחני ותזכה לראות פני השכינה, וזה לא ימוש לעולם. It is in this place that one has the ability to see a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The practical implication of this chazal, that even though they're physically destroyed, they nevertheless maintain their Kedusha, has very powerful ramifications for us today. As the Klei Yochor notes, a person can come to the Makom HaMikdash today, can come to the Kotel HaMaravi today, and be able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to acquire the Shleimus, the completion of a spiritual connection with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we all know this, that the Kotel has the ability to change people completely, has the ability to transform people so totally. And as again, Rav Dessler notes in Strive for Truth, he says it's really important to understand that all reality is relative to the observer. What I perceive as real defines my world, and this in turn depends on my spiritual level. When an individual comes to the Kotel, comes to the Yerushalayim today, so you can have two people that will come to the Kotel of two different reactions. The difference is based on the observer. A person, what they see, reflects and defines what spiritual reality are they on. And that's how he explains, he says, should we realize when Avram Yitzchak saw a cloud hovering over the mountain, which beckoned them to the Akedah, while the servants did not see this, the seeing and the not seeing indicated the relative levels. It would be a mistake to think that this vision was a mere hallucination. What they saw was the reality of their world. And as the Maharal explains, he emphasizes that human language always refers to the reality that is present in the human mind. What we see around us, and this is so true, of people we meet in situations that we encounter, we view things from our spiritual reality. We view things from the world and the mindset we are in. When we look at the Temple Mount, we have the ability to be able to put ourselves in the mindset of Kedusha and to be able to see Kedusha, to be able to see holiness, because this was a place that holiness was never taken away from. And we have this ability today, thousands of years later, to connect to this inherent Kedusha. And I think as a important corollary that comes from this idea is the concept of spiritual vision. It's the concept that we have the ability, if our mindset is correctly connected, to be able to see the world within a spiritual vision, and to be able to see the Kedusha, the holiness that surrounds our lives. And this idea is really echoed in the Or Yahel Rabbi Yehuda Leib Chassman, the Chevron Mashkiach, who explained that if you look at people's lives, people have a very clear design of the way they want to live their lives. Dealing with high school seniors, you see this so clearly, where they'll give you their 4-year plan, their 6-year plan, maybe seminary, and then college, and then a graduate school degree, what type of work they want to go into, etc. But we don't have is a spiritual vision as well. We don't have the ability to ask ourselves, well, where do we want to be spiritually 6 years from now? What is our spiritual plan? And just like as we saw, to look at the Beis HaMikdash means to really tune in to the spiritual import of what is found in that place, this idea has to be transferred to all aspects of our lives. Do we look at our lives as the Kotel being a place of just a bunch of walls, a stone wall? Are we able to see the Kedusha, the holiness inherent in it? And the same question has to be asked about our lives. Do we look at our lives as we get up in the morning, you know, we read the paper, have breakfast, go to work, eat dinner, come home, go to sleep, catch the news or whatever it may be in life, whatever we spend time, homework with kids, whatever it may be, carpool, dry cleaning? Or do we ask ourselves when we're in the morning, when we say Moda'ani, what do I want to accomplish spiritually today? When I go to sleep at night and I say Todah Hashem, what am I thankful for the day? How have I grown as an individual the day that just transpired? Are we able to have a spiritual vision for our lives? Are we able to take our lives as having meaning, as having direction, and where are we going? And the Oryal explains this so beautifully. He says, this is true when we daven, this is true when we learn. Our question that we have to ask ourselves is, well, what do we want to gain from this? Why am I learning? Why am I davening? Am I just mumbling words? Am I just going through the motions? Or is there something I'm trying to gain as an individual through this experience? And that's the question we need to ask ourselves. What is our spiritual vision? Where are we going with our lives? How are we looking at this world? Take the message of that even though it's physically destroyed, it maintains its kedusha. That we have the ability to tune ourselves into a spiritual reality in one place, and we have that same ability to tune into that spiritual reality in all aspects of our physical lives. To be able to see beyond the destruction, beyond the physical, that the kedusha, the heartbeat, is still there. And to be able to see that spiritual essence. And I think in conclusion, that the key really of the whole parsha, as Rav Aviner explains in Talch Hermon, Milat HaKesem, the magic word in the parsha, is the first word, Im, if. Im b'chukosai telechu, if you walk in Hashem's ways. It's up to us. Life is about really taking the initiative and realize we are in control of our lives. We have the ability to make decisions on what type of person we are. And so often people say, well, what do you want from me? I'm under the pressures of a livelihood. I'm under the pressures or whatever it may be, social pressures, whatever it is. And it's hard for me really to free myself from all of that and to have time to think and time to contemplate and time to grow. Im b'chukosai telechu, if we have that ability. We have to understand that we are in control of our lives. And not give excuses that there's so many other things impinging on our ability to think straight. And therefore, in conclusion, I think this pasuk, which describes the destruction of the physical Beis Hamikdash as part of the curse, has a certain bracha, has a very deep message for our lives. The message is, as we saw so clearly, Afal pi sheshalamim b'kedushasan heim omdim. Even though the physical building is destroyed, the kedusha, the holiness, still exists. On the first level, it was Yitzchak Avinu who gave the soul, Shlomo built the body, Yoshiyahu, who was able to take the temple and take the ark and put it away. The heartbeat is still there. The first message for us is when we live in this imperfect balance of body-soul, that we're living in a world of shomimim, of destruction, of our body and soul not working together. The heartbeat is still there. We need to be able to fan the flames of the heart, which has the she'ifa, desire for God. Integrate that which we learn into our lives so it becomes part and parcel of our lives. And make sure that we're constantly growing, constantly changing ourselves so we become better people. And never remain stagnant. And on the second level, the kedusha of the temple is around forever because it's a kedusha infused by God from the beginning of time. It's the shechina which gives it that kedusha. And as a result, as the Klei Yechir so beautifully says, we have the ability to see that spirituality when we come to the Beis HaMikdash. But really, we need to take as a lesson from this, is that our whole world is based upon the way we view things. The whole world is based upon the way we have as a spiritual reality. It's a question of the way we view and what our vision is. Just like we have the ability to see a place, a physical place of sticks and stones, to be a place which is a repository for the Shechina to feel the Divine Presence. That is the same challenge incumbent upon us in our own lives, in our own day-to-day endeavors in life, to be able to see the Kedusha of the Holiness, to go beyond the physical, go beyond the Shmama, the destruction, the desolation, the dark physicality, and to feel the heartbeat, to have that spiritual vision and to say, what am I making of myself spiritually? What are my spiritual goals for myself in my life? And be able to keep that heartbeat going so ultimately we will have that reconciliation between body and soul. And we'll have the bracha b'tochachem where Kosh Baruch Hu will be mishare hashchina on kol yochid v'yochid on every individual.